Hello and welcome to Home to Her, the podcast that's dedicated to reclaiming the lost and stolen wisdom of the sacred feminine. I'm your host, Liz Kelly, and on each episode, we explore her stories and myths, her spiritual principles, and most importantly, what this wisdom has to offer us right now. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. All right. Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Home to Her podcast. I am your host, Liz, joining you from Central Virginia and the unceded ancestral lands of the Monacan Nation. And I am so glad that you are here. So before we jump in, I want to share some news that is super close to my heart. I have written a book. It's called Home to Her as well. And it is my exploration of and love letter to the sacred feminine as I have come to know her and understand her. And it represents the culmination of many years of research, plus some of my personal experiences with her. And it's also been really guided by the wisdom shared with me by so many guests on this show over the last 2.5 years. So the book Home to Her is being published by Womancraft Publishing, which is my most favorite publisher. And I'm not just saying that because they signed me. They were even before that. You may have heard Womancraft founder and author Lucy Pierce. She's been interviewed on this show twice before. It's one of my most popular guests. And so the book is available for pre-order now at Womancraft Publishing and via my website, hometoher.com. So I will put links in the show notes if you're interested, and those who pre-order get signed copies, woohoo, plus a couple of fun bonuses, including a great mother meditation that I've recorded that's based on my own practice. And then I'm also going to be doing a Zoom call with Lucy. She's going to turn the tables on me and interview me. So we'll talk about, you know, the research behind the book and some of the most important things that I've learned from hosting this show. And we'll be taking your questions too. So if you're interested, please check it out. And without further ado, let's get on with our show. So if you're a frequent listener, then I'm certain you've figured out by now how liberating it has been for me to connect with who I refer to as the sacred feminine. She has changed my life in the most positive and challenging ways, which is, of course, why I host the show, and it's why I wrote my book. But you know what? We are not all having the same experience, and we really shouldn't be. I mean, there are 8 billion of us who live on this planet. And so I know that my experience of the sacred feminine is really relevant to me, and it might be relevant to some other people too. And for others, perhaps not at all. So here's where I'm at currently. And I do feel like I need to say currently because things change. But here's what I'm thinking currently. A spiritual practice that is rooted in patriarchy wants to lock things down with dogma, definitions, and practices that are fixed and offer a clear path to transcendence. My experience with what I call the sacred feminine, however, takes me in an opposite direction. My spiritual practice seems to become more and more organic. I pray to the trees. I talk to the nettles in my backyard. I mumble off a few Hail Marys as I'm rushing to pick up my kids from wherever they are. And to the outside observer, it might look really haphazard or inconsistent or even chaotic, but I feel like she asked me to expand what my idea of her and the sacred is. And she invites me to listen, to get less fixed and more fluid. And since I've been hosting the show, I feel like I've been invited into this space of listening and fluid inquiry many, many times. And I'm pretty sure my guest today is going to invite us all to do this as well. We met through the Way of the Rose. Y'all who are regular listeners probably know of how important reclaiming the rosary and praying that practice has been to me. And my very first guests on the show were Clark Strand and Perdita Finn, who are the co-authors of Way of the Rose. I'm really, really excited to have my guest here today. So let me go ahead and introduce him to you all. Finn Schubert is a writer, storyteller, and epidemiologist. He is a board member at Baltimore Wisdom Project and co-author of Developing Trans Competence, a short guide to improving transgender experiences at meditation and retreat centers. Released in 2014, this book was an early resource on transgender inclusion in Buddhist communities. After a public health career, primarily focusing on issues of reproductive health and HIV, Finn now works as a consultant and writer. His most recent essay collection, Even the Cemeteries Have Space Here, explores finding home in body, place, and time. An intimate look at a moment in his life when he moves to a small town to start over and immediately gets his period back. Finn is joining us from his home today in Phoenicia, New York, in the Catskills. Finn, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to have connected with you.
Me too. And so we got to meet last year, it's 2021, in New York, in Woodstock, when we were there for a gathering that the Way of the Rose that Clark Strand and Perdita Finn had. But barely. And so I'm really excited we've been able to connect outside of that. And I'm thrilled to have you here today. So I would love to start where I usually start with most of my guests, which is just getting a little bit of a sense of your spiritual background growing up. And I guess what I've found in talking to people is that very often there's a pivot, or what you learned as a child is not necessarily what you carried forward. But just in general, I'd love to start kind of with rooting in there, if that works for you.
Sure, absolutely. So I grew up in New York City, and my mother was a Unitarian Universalist, and my father was a Catholic. They kind of started out trying to raise us Catholic, but I think we all had various spiritual journeys, and my parents became very interested in Zen meditation. And so that was actually a big part of my life growing up as well. So when I became an adult, I was really interested in pursuing Zen Buddhist practice. And I became very involved with the Zen Buddhist community for most of my 20s that offered me a very rigorous approach to spiritual practice. I was really drawn to the liturgy in that community, the way that they seem to put a lot of care into how they went about things, and also the sense that there was a real system that was laid out for me in terms of kind of like, show up, do this. This community had a monastery, so that was, of course, a very regimented environment that I would visit pretty often. And at that time, I think that was very appealing to me, this idea that I could just kind of show up somewhere and sort of like get with the program, and eventually I would be helped in my spiritual development. And so I participated very actively in that community throughout my 20s. Another thing that was going on for me at that time was my gender transition. And things were very different, you know, more than 10 years ago when this was going on. And so my community didn't always meet me in the ways that I needed. And that's part of what spurred me to get together with a few friends and create this guide in 2014 that really opened a conversation about transgender people's experiences in this community. This guide is now kind of very out of date, but at the time it really opened a conversation that needed to be had. And sort of as I reached the end of my 20s, and we'll get into some of the other factors that happened around this time, I realized that what that community offered me was not what I was looking for anymore. I wanted a spiritual practice that allowed me to have a more direct connection with my intuition and with the guidance that I was receiving. I wanted something where I could kind of trust myself to create my spiritual and liturgical practices in ways that felt right to me, as opposed to ways that were laid out for me. And I think most of all, I wanted to get away from sort of a linear experience of progress or of hierarchy. And so because of that, I left that community a couple of years ago, and I found the Way of the Rose and other practices that have been more supportive for me. Mm.
I have lots of questions, So I wonder first, could you, for the listeners, explain Zen Buddhism as opposed to like perhaps other forms of Buddhism? Like, I know for me, my first foray into Buddhism was through it was Tibetan Buddhism. It was through mm-hmm. the Shambhala Center, which I know is a little bit different. But yeah, could you explain kind of what Zen Buddhism is?
Well, I don't feel comfortable kind of speaking to it in such a broad way, but I will say, like, some of the things that I noticed or that drew me to this particular approach is that it can be very pared down. You know, there's a very strong emphasis on Zazen seated meditation.
Okay.
In general, I think that to me, it felt very simple and straightforward. When I would go to Tibetan Buddhist centers, I felt like there was kind of a lot going on, or there were like different deities. And I'm just being honest, like I found it confusing. And in Zen, it was kind of like, show up, sit down, do some chanting, you know, meet with your teacher. And I was like, okay, like I can get my head around this. Because I think, again, at that time, I was really looking for, I didn't trust myself enough to figure out what was going to be right for me. And so I was kind of looking for something where I could just kind of like show up, sit down and feel like I was on the right path or whatever.
Yes. Yes. That makes sense. And well, and I wonder too, and I understand what you're saying about Tibetan Buddhism. I think for me, like the pictures of the gurus hanging up and stuff, it was so different than anything I'd had like growing up in a Protestant church. Like you had an empty cross up there. That's what I, you know, looked at. Like, so that was, it was very different to me too. And the idea of different deities was strange to me. And then for a while I went into the Vipassana practice where I was just sitting and emptying. And so I don't know, but I imagine maybe there's some similarities there to Zen. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that there are similarities in terms of the emphasis on emptiness and on meditation practice.
Yeah.
I think also for me, because this was the practice that my parents had growing up, it was a little more familiar to me than sort of other forms of Buddhism. And that's probably why I sort of gravitated toward it as well.
Okay. Well, I guess that's another question that I have for you too, is so immediately when you say Unitarian Universalism and Catholicism, I think of like, they seem really different to me. And then, you know, you throw in the Zen as well. I mean, what was that? I'm just curious what that was like for you as a child. Did you experience this as liberating or more like my parents kind of don't know where they're going, or, you know, what was your view of that?
Well, I don't want to speak too much for my parents, but I don't think I thought too much about it. You know, okay. I grew up in New York City, and so I had friends of a lot of different religious traditions and no religious traditions. And so I wouldn't say that I thought too much about it, actually.
Okay.
In some ways, like kind of telling the story later, it sounds more interesting than it felt at the time.
Oh, I love that. Okay. So then tell me like what sort of, you know, that whether, well, I'm interested if there was sort of a transition point for you away from the Zen practice. Was it a more gradual thing, and how you found your way towards Way of the Rose, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's such a juicy topic because there's so many threads there. I would love to read you a poem that I wrote, which I think you know, because yes. I think that provides a starting point to discuss some of these threads. So yes. I think part of it was really just that I had kind of matured and grown into myself. So I wanted something a little bit different, but I also had different experiences going on in my life at that time. And a big one was that I was trying to get pregnant and have a baby, and it wasn't working for me. And this poem is about a specific moment in that journey that was really a turning point in my spiritual practice. So I will read it and then we can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I would love that.
Okay. The name of the poem is In the Witch Shop. I was a Buddhist then and never asked for anything. I chanted each day, desires are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. And I wanted to be pregnant with a fierceness beyond reason. Enough to stop tea and let my body go alien. Enough to let countless ultrasound wands into a hole I had no word for. Enough to let doctors pump radioactive fluid into my womb while I writhed in pain. My Zen teacher had told me to meditate on the phrase, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. My longing made me feel unclean. Shame prickled the back of my neck when I entered a witch shop and said, I want a fertility candle, but since I'm trans, maybe not a goddess one. The young man behind the counter wore a shirt that said, don't be a basic witch. He smiled and offered a choice, a male god like fire melting the snow, or the great mother of the sea, a blue candle that smelled like a long forgotten lullaby. He said, "Take the one that calls you." I was afraid. Maybe candle magic was for fools, like those folktale peasants who squander their three wishes and end up worse than they started. As a child, I'd only ever asked Santa for world peace. But the ocean mother's scent was like the imprint of a hug through lifetimes. I reached for her. He said, "The great mother holds everyone, no matter who you are." She whispers, "What do you want, baby? What do you want?" I didn't know you could say what you wanted or have anyone to hold you and listen. Thank you.
Mm. Wow. Beautiful. I do know that poem. I will. Is that, can I put a link to that in the show notes? Is that out there somewhere?
Yeah,
I can. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yes, that's right. Cause I shared it in the Facebook group. Okay. So I will definitely do that so people can see it. So yes. Yeah, so tell me about that. Tell me about that experience. And was that experience an opening for you of sorts at the moment, or is it more reflective looking back where you're like, ah, this is taking me somewhere?
So I think for me, when I tried to get pregnant and I wasn't able to, that caused a lot of self-reflection because it was something that I wanted for most of my adult life. And, you know, I know that people don't always associate pregnancy with bodies like mine, but as I had the parts and the desire, like this was important to me. And so in order to try to get pregnant, I had to go off testosterone and let my menstrual cycle come back. And I have honestly always loved having a menstrual cycle. And it's actually a big theme in my writing. And when my cycle came back, I was invited to notice that I liked having a cycle. I liked not feeling the same way every day. I liked having a sense of marking time. And even though it was very devastating, kind of month after month to get my period, I also really appreciated that my period provided an opportunity for me to kind of rest and reflect and prepare for the next month. And as this kind of went on month after month, I realized that this was a time where I really wanted something and there was kind of nothing I could really do about it. I think that many of the other things that I've wanted in my life, largely as a function of privilege, were pretty available if I like worked harder or, you know, I took certain concrete steps that would really increase the probability of it working out. And this really felt kind of beyond my control in the same way. And so as we saw in the poem, you know, I had a lot of fear around naming my desires because that was not a part of my spiritual practice. And I felt very afraid of it. I felt like there was kind of going to be a catch or like it was selfish. And I remember kind of standing in this witch shop and I was very reluctant, but at the time I was about to start going to a fertility clinic. So I was like, if I'm going to go like further in the medical direction, I'm going to go further in the sort of spiritual direction to like balance out or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I remember like feeling so drawn to the scent and the candle that this person showed me. And when he explained like the great mother holds everyone, she asks you what you want. I had just never heard of that. That was so outside of anything that was part of my spiritual practice at that time. And when I went home and lit the candle, I realized it was the first time that I had actually asked for a pregnancy and a baby. And so that despite the fact that this had been going on for a long time, it just had not been part of my practice to do that. And so I would say that that was the first time I really came into contact with the Great Mother or understood that there might be a different way of relating to the world. And so, you know, there's many other threads to the story, but I think that that was a real shift for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know, I think when I met you in, Woodstock, in 2021, You shared a little bit about that, if not the poem, but I think you shared a little bit about that experience. And I think one thing that you said that really kind of struck me is that you felt like, and you please clean up my words if I don't have this right, but this is what I remember you saying. It was something like that, you know, you felt like the goddess, it wasn't for you. It wasn't for people like you. And I remember that really feeling like kind of I received that as like, oh gosh, like that felt like a knife in my heart, because I don't know, that doesn't feel like it did, that I personally don't want to perpetuate anything that would be like that. But I wonder if you are comfortable speaking to maybe why you were like, well, don't give me a goddess, I'm trans.
Yeah. I think, you know, different things are going to be medicine to different people, right?
Yeah.
So I feel very comfortable with the idea that some people have spiritual practices that are not going to work for me and vice versa. So, you know, I had always put any sort of goddess thing a little bit in that bucket. And the reasons for that are, I think I've always had a difficult time locating myself within archetypes. So I identify as a transgender man, and I also feel very like proud and happy with the way that my body is. And, but I don't see a lot of, you know, sculptures or archetypes that where I see myself in them. And even when there are archetypes that are sort of like transgender or non-binary or something like that, they're often kind of both. And that's not how I feel. That's not how I look. And so like, I don't necessarily see myself in those either. Mm-hmm. And so when I look at some images of the goddess, you know, sometimes they're, you know, they don't all look the same, but in general, it tends to be kind of a standard cisgender woman's body.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really wonderful for people who relate to that or like find comfort in that. But it's not my body, it's not my trans sister's body, it's not my non-binary sibling's body. So I think I have really felt like this is for people who need a different type of medicine than I need. Mm-hmm. And also, when I went into that shop, I assumed that I was looking for this candle that was gonna somehow represent me. And I didn't realize until the person in the store said that, you know, this was the great mother who holds everyone. You know, it's not about who you are. It's, you know, she wants to know what you want. And so I was like, okay, well, that I can get into. It doesn't matter who you are, you can come to her. And I think, so that kind of created an opening for me. But at the same time, I will say that I still struggle with the way that the representation, I don't see, you know, people like me or people from my community or bodies like mine or like my sisters kind of represented in this, and that can feel very difficult. I've expanded my idea of mother to really include people of a variety of genders, to include mothering as a verb instead of sort of mother as a noun. And so that has felt much more accessible to me, but it still can feel very challenging.
Yeah. Yes, that makes a lot of sense to me. Well, and I wanted to, and I kind of feel like you've answered this a little bit, but I like to ask people, you know, so when I started the podcast, I use the language, the sacred feminine, and I use it for specific reasons, you know, like because it works for me. I love the word sacred. It feels bigger to me and more also very more down to earth than divine, which feels kind of unattainable. And using the word feminine was for me a reclamation of sorts, to like to see those two words beside each other was for me something. There was a lot of medicine in that. There was like very healing for me. However, I'm curious. I'm always curious, like, how does that language land for other people? I've gotten more curious than in the 2.5 years of hosting the show, because there's people who will tell me just flat out, yeah, that didn't work for me. So I'm curious, like, what that language, like, how it even lands for you in your body and in your experience. And does it mean anything to you at all?
Yeah, and I will say that for a long time when I saw language like that, I was like, oh, this is medicine for somebody else. It's not medicine for me, and I'm gonna, you know, keep walking or whatever. And I still kind of feel that way as far as that language goes. You know, for me as a trans man, like the word feminine has been very confusing to me in my life. Obviously, I grew up being told, you know, like you're not feminine like the other girls, things like that. And one thing that is actually really interesting to me is that for me, I feel like in some ways I transitioned because I love my femininity and I wanted to express it in a way that felt more authentic to me. Like I felt like a gay man and I wanted to be able to like wear a dress and makeup and have someone say like, oh, that's a wonderful like feminine man out there, like being brave and bold in his femininity, instead of what they used to say before my transition, which was more like, why is this butch girl putting on a dress and makeup? It doesn't like look like the other girls, which is like not even what I was going for anyway. And so, you know, I just had a very hard time parsing the word feminine in general.
Yeah.
And so it's just language that when I reflect on it, I feel like my brain short circuits and so I've chosen not to kind of invest my time in that area. You know, I prefer to kind of think about mothering and the great mother, and again, to really look at those in a way that transcends gender.
Mm-hmm. I love that perspective. And I think, and again, you might have just answered my next question, but so then I wanted to ask you, well, like, so who, I mean, and it's always kind of ridiculous, like trying to put a box around the divine, like, or who is that great mother sort of energy? Is that how you would, who is the divine to you like today, or even right now in this moment? Is it that kind of great mother that is not necessarily like locked into a female body or something else?
Yeah, I would say when I feel like I'm relaxing into the divine, I feel like I'm relaxing into being mothered, but that to me, that's more of a verb and not, you know, particular body or type of entity.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know too, you know, so we've mentioned the Way of the Rose. I'm curious if you could talk a little bit more about how that's sort of taken you along the path. And I, you know, one thing I don't even think you and I have talked about much before this is, you know, if the rosary fits into your practice and how. I know that's a big part of the Way of the Rose, but I also know, you know, not everybody who gravitates towards the philosophy there. And by the way, the Way of the Rose is a book. It's also, there's a pretty big Facebook community. I feel like there's a lot of crossover between what I do and what they do. So I'll put it in the show notes if you want to find them and learn more. But I'm curious, you know, kind of how that factored in and if the rosary is a part of your life and what it brings to you.
Sure. So around the time that I was realizing that I wanted to leave my Zen Buddhist community, I was reflecting on kind of my negative experiences there related to my gender transition. And again, it was a long time ago. And so that community, like many communities, has really evolved. And there are many people today having very positive experiences there as openly trans and non-binary people. But unfortunately, you know, 10 years ago, that wasn't what I necessarily experienced, regardless of anyone's intentions. And so I asked myself, you know, why did I stay around for that? Like, why did I put up with that? And because like, I could have just been like any other religion, you know, if I wanted to be treated that way, basically. And I felt a lot of sadness that I didn't feel connected to the religious traditions of my ancestors. And so I had my grandmother's rosary and I decided to try starting to pray it, but I felt a little uncomfortable for a lot of the reasons that come up for many people around this. But it also felt very good to have a religious practice that also belonged to my grandmother and perhaps, you know, her grandmother and things like that. And so I was reluctant to read the book, The Way of the Rose, because I basically had a policy of not reading materials that like refer to the divine feminine or whatever, because again, I was like, this is medicine for somebody else. It's not for me. But after it was recommended to me a couple of times, I read it and it kind of provided the missing piece for me to incorporate the rosary into my practice and also to become closer to my ancestors. And they sort of suggest in the book that the rosary goes back before Catholicism and was kind of, you know, brought along into Catholicism. And that feels very good to me that it could connect me even further back to earlier ancestors. So I do pray the rosary. And I think one of the things that has been so important to me about it is the emphasis on cycles. So again, I feel like the last several years of my life, I've been really trying to divest from linearity and embrace cycles. And so in the rosary, the three mysteries just kind of go around and around and around. And that feels very comforting to me.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Oh, and I'd love to talk to you more just about this idea of cycles in general. And the first thing that kind of popped in my head as you were saying that you're trying to divest yourself from linearity. I love that language. It's hard, isn't it? Do you find that hard, especially in a world that is so, just seems to be so invested in linearity? I wonder if you feel like, and I'm saying it because I feel like this a lot, like I'm, you know, it's almost like you're constantly going against the grain to do that. I mean, what's your experience been in that regard?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think that for me, so getting back to my period. So after I had tried unsuccessfully to conceive, I went back on testosterone and my period went away. And I realized that I was like, wow, I feel the same every day. And that was really unusual for me because even when I was on testosterone before, it was on like a 2-week cycle. So there was kind of a little like peak and trough in terms of my hormonal situation. And they had kind of stopped doing that during the time I was off testosterone. So now I was like on a weekly dose and I was like, wow, like my emotions are kind of the same every single day. And I haven't experienced this ever in my adult life. And it feels a little bit weird, honestly. And so a little bit after that, and this is something I write about in my book, Even the Cemeteries Have Space Here, I stopped testosterone again, and I really wanted to kind of get back in touch with how it felt to have a menstrual cycle and to understand which aspects of the challenges that I had while the last time I was off testosterone were sort of situational and which were just inherent. Because I think one thing that people don't necessarily always understand about trans people's experience is just like many of us feel very different when we're on hormones. And so often there's this real external focus of, you know, how is our appearance changing? And for many of us, like we can feel right away, you know, we feel different in our bodies, our emotions feel different. And that is a very important component. But anyway, so I missed having a period. I wanted to have a cycle again. And unlike any other time that I have had a period in my life, I was now self-employed and like, frankly, a little bit underemployed. So I didn't have the pressure to kind of show up and leave my house and pretend I wasn't having a period. So I could really kind of make space to feel different and to feel like I was having a cycle. And this really offered me the opportunity to explore a lot of the values that I had. Another thing that happened during that time was I switched from using a menstrual cup to using period underwear. And I used to always like a menstrual cup because it made me feel like I wasn't on my period, like I could just go around and do whatever and deal with it once a day. But like with period underwear, like you feel it coming out and, you know, right, stuff like that. And I was like, wow, I can't believe my whole life I preferred a menstrual product because it made me feel like I wasn't menstruating. And I never had thought about that before. Yes. And so I started to really unpack a lot of what I believed about menstruation and how it was very tied to ideas of linearity, feeling the same every day, being measured based on the ability to produce the exact same amount every day. And so for me, it was really a way of, within my own body, thinking about different ways of being in the world.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about, I really appreciate your perspective. And I'm thinking of how this, like, so if I think about like the world of the sacred feminine, you know, which is, the world that I've been in for the last several years, and, this idea of reclaiming our understanding of our bodies, the cycles, like celebrating menstruation as opposed to shunning it, you know, which is, I think for a lot of cis women, it's all tied together. You know, it's like this is the sacredness of my body, and it is me knowing my body as woman, you know? And so I wonder for you, like, what does that look like for you? Like, you know, is that, and how is that, has it been just natural for you to have this kind of sacredness of body doesn't have to be tied up in woman, or has there been like a decoupling from understanding the gender binary, or what does that look like for you?
Well, I think that we each have a lot of expertise on our own life and what's going to work for us, and very little about anyone else's. And so one thing that I find sort of painful about some of the conversations about reclaiming menstruation is that they've really been used to shame trans women and to suggest that women who menstruate are, you know, better or more important than women who do not for any particular reason. And so that feels like a very painful edge of this for me.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's absolutely true that cultural stigma around menstruation is really tied to misogyny. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be that every woman menstruates or everyone who menstruates is a woman for that to be a part of this conversation that needs to be acknowledged. So I want to kind of hold both of those things.
Yeah.
And then say that for me, I don't know, I just don't think about it too much, honestly. I think that, you know, this is the body I have, this is the life I'm living this time around. And so I feel happy to enjoy what my body has to teach me this time. And I also think that cycles are really available to all of us. And so for some of us, menstruation is a great way to sort of engage with that. But for those of us who don't menstruate, I think the lunar cycle, or even really honoring cycles of energy in our body, can be really important. So during the time that I was on testosterone, you know, I didn't have a menstrual cycle, but there were certain days that I would feel really tired. But because of my mindset in that period of my life, I was just like, oh, like, what's wrong with me today? You know, I better like fix myself. I better like drink more coffee or like kickstart this somehow. But I wish that I had made a note of like what those days were, or figured out if there might have been some sort of energetic cycle going on for me. So I think that menstruation is a really important cultural conversation that in some ways we're just kind of scratching the surface of. But at the same time, you know, I think that we need to be very careful about having this conversation in a way that is honoring everyone's body and also appreciating the many different ways that we can get in touch with cycles in our life.
Yes, I feel that. Well, and this kind of brings up this sort of a related question that we've been talking kind of around, but the idea of embodiment in general. And I'm wondering too, as you talk about reclaiming cycles, and has your experience of embodiment been fluid? Like, meaning you, or has your understanding of embodiment changed as you've sort of moved into that cyclical awareness? Like, is your understanding of embodiment different when you were on testosterone versus now? Or like, how would you speak about that?
I'm going to have to say, I don't fully understand the question because I don't I don't know what's meant by embodiment. Like, it did feel different to be in my body. But also yeah. It's like I have the same body every day, and then maybe we have this sort of like false sense of continuity because like we go to sleep and then we wake up and it feels like there's a sense that we have the same body, but you know, maybe we don't. And like many of us have, you know, regardless of being trans or not, like I'm sure that many of us have different bodies when we're 40 than when we're 20 or whatever it is. And yet we don't necessarily honor those shifts either. Many of us, our bodies have been changed by childbirth, by surgeries, by accidents, and or, you know, we used to have like a lot of flexibility and range of motion, and now we don't, or vice versa. And so I think that bodies are really fascinating. And in some ways, I feel that my gender transition or my gender stuff just fits alongside so many other shifts or changes in embodiment, as opposed to being a particular unusual shift.
Yes. And thank you for saying you didn't understand my question. Let me see if I could get better on that too. I think what I'm trying to say is, and again, so I'm relating things to my own experience, which is what I have to draw from. And I think in terms of embodiment, I'm not even sure that I was aware that I had a body for a long period of time, that I spent a lot of time in my head. And it was really spiritual practice, and the particular spiritual practice that kind of brought me into like, oh yes, I have a physical form, and it is sacred, and it has things to teach me. And so that's still kind of like not a super clear question, but I guess I'm curious about what that experience has been like for you. Is that better? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I think one of the things that I got from my Zen practice was an ability to get very quiet and sort of tune into sensations. But what I got later on as I shifted in my spiritual practice was the ability to trust what was coming in and to trust wisdom and guidance that came to me through my body. So, I mean, now I feel that my ancestors speak to me in my body, you know, sometimes through sensations or other, largely through different types of sensations. You know, sometimes there can be something a little bit clearer coming in through one of the other senses, but trusting that, you know, my body has things to tell me and sort of reiterating that I'm willing to listen to it. And I think for such a long time, because I was so invested in linearity, I saw my body as a problem to be solved. So like, I have to optimize my health, I have to optimize my energy, things like that, as opposed to saying, you know, why does my body feel this way? What does it need? Things like that. And so that's been a real process for me.
Yeah. Well, and I would love to have you, I've got your book right here. I kind of want to show it to those who are watching, but my camera gets all wonky every time I put something in front of it. So you might, anyways, I'll make sure to put a link in it to the show notes, but I'd love to have you talk a little bit about your collection of essays. Even the cemeteries have space here. And I love this book, by the way. They're essays, but it's like reading poetry. You know, there's a lot of depth and wisdom packed into each word, but I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that collection and how that came together.
Sure, absolutely. So in January, I moved from my home of New York City to a small town in upstate New York called Valencia. And I had a 5-month sublet there. And my motivation for moving there was really to kind of start my life over, to move into my work as sort of a freelancer and a writer, and to have the experience of being somewhere where there was more space, which I never experienced. And so the essays really concern what was on my mind at that time, what was on my heart, as I grounded myself in this new place, got used to my body that was menstruating again, and sort of grieved what I had left behind. So they're all very deeply rooted in this one place in this period of time, which kind of makes the collection kind of, I think of it as kind of like a little tiny gem You know, it's just a very specific place and time where all of these essays were written. And since then, I've moved to my new home in a different town. And so, you know, the adventure continues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like, I felt like reading it. It's like, I'm trying to think of a comparison. It's sort of like watching a movie, you know, where you watch the movies where it's just mm-hmm. this very small window into someone's life and this one period of time. And you kind of, and it's really sweet in that way because you don't know what really came before and you don't really know what's coming after. So, but there's something super intimate about that, I think, you know, as opposed to mm-hmm. trying to tell a big trajectory. So where are you now? I mean, I know where you are. I know you're in New York, but I'm curious where you are now and like, what does your spiritual practice look like today? And you know, what is happening for you in this moment?
So I am still getting settled in sort of this next phase of my life. So I do have a spiritual practice around the rosary. I also finally got to set up my ancestor altar in my new space, which is really important to me. And the Deity Santa Muerte has been helpful to me lately as well. I think that I'm figuring out my larger writing project, which is going to be a longer conventionally published book that I'm calling it a love letter to being a gay man with a uterus. And I'm really excited about it.
Oh, wow. I love that. And tell us about Santa Muerte, for those who may not know anything about this deity.
You know, I'm not an expert, but I wanted sure. to give her credit because I asked her for something and she really came through for me. Okay. So you'll have to have someone else on to talk about her.
Well, sure. But yeah, well, and or maybe if you know anything, you can send me a link or I'll try to put something in the show notes for people.
I mean, you know, her name translates to Saint Death. She's often depicted as a skeleton. And as I was making so many of these endings in my life, I just kind of gravitated toward her. But I wouldn't say that my practice with her is very developed. Mm-hmm. But I just couldn't kind of not mention. Because I think sometimes, you know, you just kind of never know what deity is going to show up. But at the same time, it's important to be a little bit careful and respectful around that. So I just feel like I'm not really the best person to kind of speak with authority or in generalizations about that particular deity.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand that. I know for me, kind of earlier on when all of this was unfolding, Kali showed up. Like I didn't even really know who she was. And so, I'm careful how I talk about that as well, because she's not of my tradition. I'm not Hindu. And yet she showed up. I mean, she clearly had something to teach me at that point, perhaps, you know, around death and destruction as well. So anyways, I understand what you're saying. I'm curious, I guess, too, with your spiritual practice. I just feel like, I know for me right now, it's hard for me to have any conversation with some depth without just acknowledging I don't even know the word for it, or just what's happening all around us, you know, this kind of crumbling chaos. I know early on when I was recording this show, I felt like, oh gosh, I need to be sure I record these like really close to when they air, because, you know, in case something happens. And now I'm like, no, something is happening all the time. Like I don't have to try and coordinate that. I could name the latest mass shooting and next week there might be another one, you know, it doesn't really matter. And so I wonder, what's my question here? I'm thinking of your spiritual practice and, you know, and how it helps you navigate. Do you find hope? Are you even looking for hope? I feel like I've had multiple guests come on who are like, hope is not a thing that I'm holding on to. But I'm wondering, you know, how it helps you sort of move through what's happening right now? And is it a hopeful practice or just kind of a hand to hold as the shit continues to hit the fan? Sorry to be crass, but that's what came up.
Yeah, I think that's a tough question. And one of the things that has been helpful for me is some of what Perdita Finn has to say about the long story. Yeah. So this is obviously a very difficult time, and it's been a difficult time for a really long time, you know, a really, really, really long time. Like the last couple of thousand years have been pretty ugly at a minimum. And, but at the same time, you know, even that is really a blip in terms of even the life of the planet, let alone, you know, other broader situations out there. And so I feel like I find that a little bit comforting, that I feel that I don't really know what the bigger picture is. I try to just show up and do the work that I feel called to do. So I think that that's hard, and I think it can be very overwhelming because there are so many things to fix or to take care of. And there are pieces that I work on in my activism or in my art or in my relationships with friends and loved ones, but I can't hold myself to do every last thing. And so I have to also have a practice of feeling like what I did was enough, or feeling like if what I did was not enough, like what am I going to do the next time? So that can be helpful for me as well.
Well, that feels like a good place, I think, to put a placeholder for now, I guess, to wrap this conversation up. I really want to thank you for joining me today, Fen. This is wonderful. It's great to hear more about your experiences. So thank you for being here with me.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. This was wonderful.
Yeah. And so Finn's book is Even the Cemeteries Have Space Here. I really want to show it because it's a beautiful cover. Okay, I'm going to try. And if those of you are watching on video, it gets all blurry, whatever. That's okay. You've seen me enough. So let me see if you can see it here. I will make sure I put links in the show notes so you can find it. And then you also write on Substack, correct?
I do. And so a lot of the essays in the book started smaller on Substack, and there's a lot else there as well. And so that's finschubert.substack.com. Okay. And I also want to mention that the gorgeous cover of the book, as well as all the interior illustrations, were done by Shay in the Catskills, who is a fantastic artist and tarot reader. And so it would be great to check her out as well.
Okay. And I'll put her in the show notes as well. All right. And yes, thank you for joining me. And thank you to everybody else for listening and being here. You know, I've referenced seeing. So for those of you listening on the audio, I sometimes forget to remind you that there's a Home to Her YouTube channel. If you want to, you know, just see what we look like and watch us have this conversation, you can do that there. And if you know anybody who is hearing impaired who would like to access these, they can see these with captions too. And I want to thank all of you guys, as always, for listening and for being here. And if you like the show, please tell somebody about it. Subscribe, leave me a good review, do all those things if you feel inspired. And until next time, I will talk to you again very soon. Home to Her is hosted by me, Liz Kelly. You can visit me online at hometoher.com. where you can find show notes and other episodes, you can read articles about the Sacred Feminine, and you'll also find a link to join the Home to Her Facebook group for lots more discussion and exploration of her. You can also follow me on Instagram at Home to Her to keep up to date with the latest episodes. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here soon.